What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
What secret was revealed when cleaning out the home of a deceased family member? Story 1. Not really a secret, more of a sad and morbid discovery. My dad worked for Microsoft for 25 years. He helped spearhead the original Xbox, and when I was young, we always had blank discs in our home for beta testing. It was a huge celebration when Xbox went to sale and all those buggy games we could get with actual covers on them. We had a big house and every console I could imagine at that time. He spent a lot of money. He loved his boat and his Porsche and what he could show off to people, although he was always very generous to everyone and never thought he was above people. From what I remember, I believe he had just thought he made it. I think he did for a very short time, but he was always coming up with the next million-dollar idea. My mom divorced him when I was 9 and he spiraled. His untreated bipolar and drinking problem got a hold of him. He was demoted and permanently fired from MS 3 years later. Right before he offed himself at 49, my dad lived with his 6 dogs in his mother's separated garage. I honestly wouldn't say separated, but just a garage with a bed set and microwave and TV in it for a couple months beforehand, but then he had moved to living in motels and rehab houses for a couple months. He was in a half house when he offed himself. He never went to jail. But he got into Oxford, I guess. The worst thing I found going through his room was his diary. It was just a bunch of legal pad journals. You know the yellow ones? They had scripts for plays written in them. Scripts about his dogs and him. And at the end, that was all it was. Just play scripts about him living in an apocalypse situation and trying to live as long as they could. And he gave his last can of food to Sabu, his Italian greyhound. It was so disjointed and freaking juvenile, I could literally track his cognitive decline. He was so intelligent before. Out of everything I found, when clearing out, this was the most heartbreaking. I could see his mind go in his writing, when we had just spoken the day before. And I couldn't save him, but I did try my best. Not really a secret, I knew he was breaking. But I never knew that bad, and I still cry thinking about it. Now 7 years later. Before we continue, do us a quick favor, smash that like button and subscribe to support our channel. Story 2. My great-grandmother was one of the survivors from a religious persecution in my home country. She hid an old English Bible, a translated Bible, all handwritten in my native language, a blood-stained English dictionary, really old and in bad condition, cross pendants and other items. A group of researchers paid my grandmother for the handwritten Bible. It was pretty interesting material for researchers to study my native language around the late 1800s. She did not want her children to be punished because of her actions at that time, so the majority of my family did not know about it. Story 3. That my mom took the $100,000 in insurance money from my dad's death in 1995. That was earmarked only for my brother and me, for when we turned 18, and instead took it for herself and bought her house from it. All while blaming me for getting hospitalized as a teenager and causing her to go bankrupt. and frequently pushing me in conversation to shower her with praise for letting me go to a mental health treatment center as a teenager when I told her I needed to be hospitalized because it got me on the right track. In my father's will, he wanted his mother, my grandmother, to be in charge of my brothers and use the money from his life insurance policy, and clearly didn't want my mother to be in control of it. Took out $100,000 in a couple different life insurance policies. After my father died, my mom had his body cremated right away before his mom arrived on a flight, a day or two after she found out. My mom also moved all his stuff into boxes into her brother's basement for my grandmother to shift into. My grandmother found his will from a couple years ago in a box which clearly stated he wanted his mother to be in control of the money. When she arrived back at her home in Chicago a few weeks later, she found a second letter my dad mailed her before he died, stating he wanted her to manage the money, along with account and policy numbers. The insurance companies took time to sort it out, because the unalive letter wasn't notarized, and my grandmother took my mom to court over it. My mom wrote letters to the insurance company, threatening them to just let her have the lump sum because I am the children's mother. I never saw any of it, save for maybe the $800 of that as tuition help from a college savings account from her in my years at college to pay off the book fees after my scholarships covered tuition. She always told me that she had saved me a college savings money, but you used all that up going to that hospital that summer when you were 15. I cut ties with my mother about 4 years ago after I had a child, and there was some troubling behavior developing. My father's mother was dying this summer, and I went to go visit her. She spent some time recalling the couple years that she took my mother to court after my father's death, and all of the money that she had taken from my father. She told me about money my father left us, and how she fought my mom in court for the ability to manage it, but I didn't know it was much. When she passed, and my aunt and I were packing her house up, we found binders and binders full of receipts for everything. This woman was a studious recorder and secretary and kept everything, organized and labeled, in page protectors and dividers in binders. I found a binder full of my dad's correspondence, his 1992 last will from his previous self-offing attempt, and his letter from when he died in 1995. I was always told that there was no letter in his letter written to his mom. There was the clear instructions as to the money he was leaving my brother and I, how to set up the right accounts, etc. He requested his mother be the person controlling the account, followed by my mom's parents before her own brother, clearly saying, not her. Following in the binder was my mom's correspondence with the insurance companies, demanding the release of money to her, and the letters she wrote my grandmother belittling her and threatening her for getting a lawyer. My grandmother got copies of my mother's letters to the insurance, twisting claims around and even pressuring to release the money to her. My grandmother also kept all the check receipts of thousands of dollars that my father saved from sending her money when he was working on a project out of state. I was shocked, but not surprised, as I had no idea there was any money left for my brother and I. I was always under the assumption that we were pretty lower class. My mother guilted me so bad for making her go on Medicaid so I could go to a residential treatment facility as a young teen, and for the psychiatric hospital visits for depression and anxiety. There were family secrets that my grandmother kept organized and neat for me to find. I also have a long audio recording of our last conversation where she told all these stories and let me know of the anger she has against my mom after all these years, and for the immediate cremation of his body before she got there. It finally made sense why my grandmother never saw us a lot growing up, but would always send us $50 or $100 bills growing up for birthdays and Christmas in her cards, even though she was on a fixed income. My mom would scoff and roll her eyes, how that's too much money, and a few times even took the money away from us to put into savings, and we never saw each other again. But to my grandmother, take care of the kids and the money was my father's last wish, and she still felt that responsibility. Story 4. My great-grandmother. She was a makeup consultant for Mary Kay for over 50 years. She had money, a nice house, was an amazing and sweet lady. She even had what was basically a celebration event at Mary Kay for how much of a dedicated worker she was, and one of Mary Kay's grandchildren came down to personally thank her himself. That entire event was even on the news as well, Dallas News if anyone wants to try and find it, it was pretty cool. She was a wonderful woman, loved to spoil me, and was seemingly the best great-grandmother anyone could ask for, but she sadly passed about 2 to 3 years before I graduated high school. All I knew of her was that she was amazing and sweet, but according to my mom and the rest of my family, there was a wild side to her. According to them, once someone became 18, she wasn't that sweet and innocent woman. Instead, she was cracking jokes, being inappropriate, giving intimate tips, making jokes, basically the life of the party, all bottled into a short 98 woman, at the time of her death. Apparently, when my mom and other family had to clean out her house, in her office there was a closet and bookshelf full of books related to intimacy and fashion. In the closet were two boxes containing books that were almost 50 years old. One box has a guidebook with a bunch of information on positions for getting pregnant, positions for better female-male fun, and ways to spice things up and make it more fun. There was another book in these two boxes that was important to note, but it wasn't a book, it was a journal she wrote in, a journal dating almost 45 years worth of biographical information. A lot of the info within this journal was about her intimate life, how good it felt, how much fun she had, a brief summary of her life before the point she started the journal, and then the rest was the almost 45-year journey she had with a man named Roos, who she went into extreme detail with.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust, Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
She described the size of his dong, how thick it was, the girth, how good it felt, and she went into very verbose and honestly professional writer levels of detail about how great everything was. Excluding those two books, there were a bunch of pictures taken of her and Roos doing these activities. Honestly, it doesn't ruin how I perceive my great-grandmother at all. In fact, it makes me think of her even better, knowing this short and sweet old lady was the most lively lady I'd ever met, and probably will ever know. I do miss her a lot and wish I could get to know her the way everyone else had, especially because I apparently have her hair, and have even inherited some of her looks, at least according to my mom. A bonus thing they also found in her house is a journal dating back from the 19th century where apparently an ancestor of mine actually invented a prototype version of the cotton gin almost a year before Eli Whitney, but my ancestor didn't know they'd have to patent it to actually take credit for it. Story 5. I'm African American, and my husband is white. My father faced a lot of prejudice during his lifetime, and I was terrified of telling him that the white guy I'd been on a date or two with was getting serious with. The first time I brought my now husband home, my dad was courteous but distant. Miraculously, by the second time, my father completely warmed up to my husband. Even my siblings were shocked. When we got married, he was beaming. It was odd, but I was just happy my husband had won him over. My mom died at 2014 and my father at 2021, when my siblings and I went to clean out the house in his safe along with other important documents. We found letters that my husband had written to my father 24 years earlier about how he felt about me, how he was serious about his relationship with me, how he was planning to go to law school, he did and he's an attorney now, how he respected that my father had gone through so much in his lifetime and eventually, how he loved me and how, with his blessing, he was going to propose. My husband never told me he'd written to my father, and my father never told me he'd been corresponding with my husband. It was so emotional finding those. I still tear up when I think about it. When I got home, my husband finally showed me the letters my father had written back. Story 6. My mother's cruel and bitter second husband was even worse than we knew. We found extensive files he kept on everyone and pages of his tight and angry handwritten notes about how he believed he was superior to everyone and how unworthy my mother and her children were. It may sound like I'm making a fuss out of nothing, but his resentment poured off the pages. He told people that he had actually written the books she authored. That was probably false. He deliberately kept them living modestly, hoping it would push her to write a bestseller, so he could live off the success. He endangered her life at least once that we know of. And the last time I ever spoke to that bitter man was when somehow my mother's oxygen got turned off, and while asleep, she somehow dialed my phone number. I could hear the machine clicking and couldn't get her to answer. I called the police in their city and state and got an ambulance out there. He subsequently called me and yelled furiously at me for calling for help for my mother. He was the most heartless and unkind person I ever met in my life. Thankfully, his first wife raised their two children, who are wonderful human beings and nothing like that miserable man. Story 7. My grandfather died at 102 years old. Born in 1919, he lived a pretty incredible life and saw things I can't even imagine. When his hearing started to go, he realized nobody wanted to answer his phone calls anymore. You would spend 20 minutes shouting into the phone about your new job, and he would, and okay, his way through the whole thing, and at the end he would ask, "And what about your new job?" Everyone got so sick of him pretending he wasn't deaf that they just stopped answering. So what did he do? He went out and bought himself a brand new iPhone and a brand new Apple desktop computer, and he taught himself to use both, and he started texting and emailing everyone extensively. We were all so proud of him and happy to be able to stay in touch in a way that wasn't insanely frustrating. When he passed, it fell to me, "You're good with computers," to sort out his computer. And wow, this man had massive amounts of hidden shoe camera upskirt recordings on his computer. Not even actual adult content, just hundreds of videos from guys that would glue a tiny camera to the tip of their shoe and follow women up escalators or stand next to them in public places to get a shot of their innards. This man was married to my grandmother for almost 60 years, and he delivered a eulogy at her funeral that brought the entire place to tears, but he was still trying to get pleasure at 100 years old. Story 8. My grandfather was a psychiatrist, and a pretty harsh man who had no love or interest in the arts. He often boasted about his children and grandchildren who were also in the medical field, but totally ignored those who had other occupations. When he died, we were cleaning up his office that he was always very protective of. A few of us were quietly expecting to find something troubling, and when we found a double-locked cabinet, none of us had ever known the contents of, we prepared for the worst. But inside were a multitude of art supplies, mostly for painting and sketches, and several sketchbooks filled with genuinely skillful paintings. The most recent was only done a few months before he died. He was an artist the whole time, and those of us who were in the arts suddenly felt cheated and outraged that he treated us like we were failures, despite very clearly having this passion himself. Story 9. So, my mom passed away a year and a half ago, and she was always very secretive about her life. After we moved provinces in 2012, she started avoiding doctors, despite her declining health, which was always suspicious. But she contracted COVID and had to be hospitalized, and it became a whole issue because there was no record of her being born in 1969. My dad had to do a lot of digging to get her real birth certificate because otherwise the hospital fees would have been astronomical if she wasn't actually a Canadian citizen. So, he reached out to her siblings that she was estranged from, and it turns out that she was actually 6 years older than she had told everyone she knew. She had also been lying about the house she grew up in. Apparently, she missed 4 years of high school and had to graduate late, but nobody knew what happened or why. Not even her siblings. Her parents died when she was in her 20s, and they'd be the only ones who knew. Unfortunately, my mom passed away before we could ask her what happened or why she lied. It'll always be a mystery, I guess. Story 10. My father died first. When my mother died, she knew I'd be the one to clean everything out from both of them. So she gathered all the evidence and made absolutely sure I'd find what she wanted me to find, and left it for me on a clipboard on her desk. Through the letters my mother kept all the years they were married, I learned my father was in love with another woman. He absolutely did not want my mother, but came back only when she realized she was pregnant with me, and she got her father and his mother involved to force him to come back. He met the other woman in art school and was so happy, it shows in his letters. He was forced to drop out and would never be allowed to return to finish his degree. On one hand, I'm thankful he was my father and had some input in my upbringing. On the other hand, I wish he'd been allowed to follow his dream and become the artist he knew he could be. My parents hated each other. He was very unhappy and deeply depressed, and of course now I know why. She constantly picked at him every day like a painful scab, all the time just nagging, and he would blow up in return. Then he'd take his anger to the office and end up getting fired. Our family was very dysfunctional. I never knew love in a family, never knew what it meant to feel happy. From the time I was really young, I just woke up feeling exhausted and wondered, well, what is going to happen today? So, yeah, thanks mom for leaving that bit of information for me to find. Story 11. Not a family member, but Nick was my elder brother Dave's closest friend. They went on holidays together when they were both single, would meet every Thursday for a beer and a curry at the local Indian restaurant, watch football together, and were good friends for some 20 years. 5 years ago, Nick died suddenly and tragically, aged 54. My brother couldn't contact him for 2 days, and so he got the police to break into his flat. Dave found Nick on the bathroom floor, toothbrush in hand, dressed and ready for work, his lunch on the kitchen counter ready to take with him. He'd been there for 2 days. Dave and Nick had recently returned from a holiday in Peru, and Nick had developed a clot in his leg after the long flight back to London. He'd been on medication for it, but the doctor was pleased with the progress and had reduced the medication. The clot had broken free and traveled to his heart, killing him. He had two elderly parents and a sister, but they asked Dave to go through his possessions for them. He asked me to help him do it. Dave found a small cash box and opened it. Inside was some £10,000 in cash, 50-pound notes, all neatly counted and bound. Then I found one too, similarly full. And then another. And another. We found some £35,000 in cash. Dave then found some notebooks. They were filled with handwritten film movie reviews, hundreds of them. He'd been going to the cinema at least twice a week for years, and Dave had no idea. We found details of investments. Nick had always said that his family were very long-lived, and so he had wanted to prepare for a long retirement. His flat was all paid up, too. In total, we found that Nick was worth around £700,000, and had never given a hint of it. He drove a modest used car, had no vices except regular foreign holidays, no sign of any reasonable wealth. Finally, we found details of a woman he had been in a relationship with. She was married, and they had been very discreet, so discreet that even Dave had no idea. He had to call the woman from the number given in the notebook and explain to her. She had no idea. Of course, it was all very, very hard. We took the cash to Nick's parents, both in their late 80s. They and his sister would inherit everything. Nick's father thanked us for our honesty and took two rolls of cash from one of the cash boxes and insisted we take one each. Dave offered to buy a painting that Nick had in his flat, a scene of a place they'd visited on one of their joint holidays, but his father wouldn't take any payment. He said Nick would have wanted him to have it. The painting now hangs in Dave's house. The saddest part of it all was that Dave and Nick had been friends for decades, but there was so much that Dave had no idea about. Why Nick chose to keep these things so secret initially upset Dave a great deal, but he came to realize that Nick had things that for whatever reason he just wanted to keep to himself. He was a lovely guy, and Dave and I still miss him. R.I.P. Nick, you daft rascal. Story 12. The timing is backwards, because I know of something that someone else had not discovered while cleaning out the home of a family member. The now deceased family member had shown it to me secretly when I was young. After the house was cleaned, I asked the family member who cleaned the home if they found anything interesting in that one old box. They blanched in shock, then pretended they had not. Obviously, they had. What secret had they destroyed? This, my Swedish immigrant grandfather, when I was around 12, took me into his home office and pulled an old sea trunk out of the closet. He removed everything to reveal the inside, then opened a false bottom showing the contents. A Nazi military uniform. Shirt, jacket, trousers, tie, insignia, belt and strap, cap, set, a complete set. There was also a knife and pistol and various small items like logoed cufflinks and small boxes and various photos of soldiers posing in buildings and parks. He wouldn't let me look through it or pick anything up and left it as is when recovering it. He didn't tell me any history about it or explain anything. He only said that keeping secrets is hard and I should live an honest life where I never create any. Story 13. Many years ago, I went with my dad and aunt to clean out my great uncle's apartment after he passed away. He was never married, had no kids, and lived, we thought, very poorly. Tiny apartment with a twin bed, table and chair, a couple of pots and pans, a couple of pants and shirts, and that's basically it. As we stripped the bed and moved the mattress, we were shocked. He had hundreds of stacks of $10 bills, wrapped in rubber bands, under his mattress. They were all $10 bills. He lived during the Depression and didn't trust banks, apparently, but we had no idea he had so much cash. He never spent it on anything, just bundled it and saved it under his mattress. Some of the bills were so old and yellow, it equaled thousands of dollars. We had no idea. Story 14. We knew my originally British, naturalized Canadian great-grandmother had been an enthusiastic amateur historian who had been fascinated by Britain's war with Napoleon, not least because she was herself tangentially related to the Duke of Wellington's family via a cousin's marriage to his son's nephew, or some connection equally obscure and tenuous. What we didn't know is that, likely in preparation for a book she never wrote, as a young woman, she had actually interviewed several dozen elderly English, French, and Spanish veterans about their experiences during that war, including three actual survivors of Waterloo, two English, one French, and an aide-de-camp to Spanish General Francisco Javier Castanos, at the time he handed the Napoleonic army its very first defeat in the field, and captured nearly 20,000 French troops at the Battle of Bailen 1808. But there it was, stored in a wooden egg crate under her iron-framed bed, among old calendars, untested recipe clippings, and copies of Family Circle magazine, a manuscript with nearly 300 pages of transcribed military memoirs, all laid out in three languages in which she was fluent, in her elegant Spencerian hand. My parents donated her manuscript to the Imperial War Museum, where no doubt it will never have human eyes laid on it again. Story 15. Quite a few years back, my dad discovered that the nice old widower across the street, whom he sort of befriended by shoveling the driveway and bagging leaves and just going over to chat with when the kids wouldn't do anything but watch TV, had something like $200,000 stashed in his mattress, the remainder of what he'd earned by having a good job, retiring at 65 and living along with his wife, a pretty modest lifestyle. They never had children. My dad gently convinced the neighbor that banks were safe now and explained the FDIC, and eventually convinced him to put it in a bank. The first bank they tried called the cops on my dad because they thought he was clearly taking advantage of this kind, elderly senior, which, what? But okay then. Cops advised them to get an attorney, which ate into the neighbor's funds a bit, but they managed to get the money into a bank, savings and checking. And my dad taught him to balance his checkbook. It was a hassle at the time, but I think back on it as being very sweet. My dad was totally appalled and hugely worried when they got all the cash out and counted it, and then when he had to patiently explain the Federal Reserve in detail multiple times and the first bank did that and they had to find a good lawyer, all of which took at least a month. They became pretty good friends, though my dad always called him by his last name, rather than using his first name. Story 16. Mine was confirmation of a wild story. My grandfather served in Korea. For years there was a tall tale about how he won a house in Korea, unsure how to phrase this politely online, that it included the family who owned it, and essentially anyone who worked there in a game of poker. When he returned home, after a few years of receiving letters and small payments, my grandmother told him to give the ownership back to the family. I don't think anyone really believed him when the story was told over and over again. My grandmother died when I was young, so couldn't ask her if it was true. When he passed away and we were cleaning out the house, we found the letters from the family and the letter from the lawyer Gramps used to officially return ownership. My grandpa owned a guest house in Korea, is a sentence that's hard to say. Story 17. My parents were getting back together. Dad died at 50 of a heart attack. Mom was devastated. Her health declined rapidly, and she died at 49 3 months later. I cleaned out both their homes and found calls, texts, and love letters. They wanted to be together again, but didn't want to put their kids and grandkids through a reconciliation until they were confident it'd work out. I knew she'd be devastated. They had been together for almost 30 years, but they were 2 years divorced and casually seeing other people. They seemed to be thriving apart. So, it was a shock when the grief was so strong that it took all the life out of her. She died of cancer, but the doctor also diagnosed her with failure to thrive, brought on by the loss of my dad, and said that it may have been possible for her to live longer and even receive treatment if the failure to thrive hadn't taken everything she was before her cancer diagnosis. The only thing worse than losing my dad was watching my mom live without him, so at the end of the day, I'm grateful she didn't live without him for long. She never would have had peace here again. She found her peace with him on the other side. Story 18. I'm a huge dork. I have worked in 3 comic shops and have a huge collection. When the girlfriend, who would eventually become the wife, and I moved into a house together, she completely lost it about how many long boxes of comics I had and the space they took up. Sports cards and binders of other non-sports cards, huge Magic the Gathering collection as well. We lived in that house for 6 years. My son and I moved out after she passed away. As I was going through the closet my comics and binders of cards were in, I found 2 small boxes that were not mine. I found her collection of Pokemon cards, and a full set of Nightmare Before Christmas cards, with her handwritten notes on the set list. She had added her small collection of books to mine without me even knowing. Story 19. My husband and I were clearing out the home of an uncle he'd only met 2 times as a child. We learned how clean and organized he was. We learned how much he loved his mom, his childhood cat, and the pride he took in his work and hobbies, music, singing, and though it seemed he'd never traveled, he liked reading about the world. We also learned he was autistic. He had strict routines and went through special education and noted everything he did in a day. As an autistic person, diagnosed as an adult and struggling, it was kind of a beautiful thing to see. He had it together in his way, and everybody he knew liked him. We made friends with his neighbors and stayed in contact. Posthumously, he gave us memories and relationships, and every once in a while, as we manage his affairs and look at the pots and pans we brought back to replace our broken ones, we say, "Thanks, Uncle." Story 20. My then-husband's beloved grandpa had some private photos hidden under the felt that lined the drawer in his nightstand. A woman in a bathing suit with some high heels on, a lady with a 1940s hairstyle posing in nothing but a man's suit jacket. Nothing too suggestive, but definitely alluring for the times. My husband and I were packing up his bedroom after he died, and my husband found them. When he did, he sat on the edge of his grandfather's bed with the photos in his lap and cried for the first time. The pin-up style photos, there were 4 of them, were all of my husband's grandmother. She'd been gone for years, and the old man could have looked at anything he wanted. He chose the woman he'd seen every day for 50 years, and how she was when it all got started. She was stunning in those modest photos. He probably would have sworn that she hadn't changed a bit. Story 21. My grandmother's brother passed away about 10 years ago. He was a hermit and a hoarder and wouldn't let anyone into his house. Whenever we'd come by to take him somewhere, he would meet us in the front yard. When he died, my mother and her sister went by to clean out the house. Among all the garbage and stacks of newspapers was a large storage container filled with letters and pictures. It turned out that his father, my great-grandfather, who had come to America from Ireland alone, saved every letter his father and siblings had ever sent him. Over 600 letters were sent between 1897 and 1960. It paints an incredibly detailed picture of their hometown in Ireland as well as our family history. Additionally, he had pictures of my great-grandmother, who died of tuberculosis in 1925. My grandmother was 7 when she died, and had never seen a picture of her mother. Story 22. When we cleared out my grandfather's house after his death, we found several photos of him when he was a young man with another man. Often their arms were around one another. As we cleared out more things, we found letters from Tony spanning at least 4 decades. It was clear they had a romantic relationship. My grandfather was gay, in love with another man. None of us know if my grandmother, who died 6 years before him, knew about this. My grandfather and Tony fought in the First World War in France together, where they probably met. The letters speak of Tony's wife and family, his work, vacations his family took, and looking for a time when he and my grandfather could spend time together. When we showed our father the letters, he read them and was genuinely surprised. He said that my grandfather and grandmother were happy together and had a good marriage. He was surprised. But he did say my grandfather would go away on business for a week or so every 3 or 4 years in the summer. My guess is he and Tony must have spent that time together. I wish I could have talked to him about his secret life, and how he felt about the life he either chose to live or was forced to live. Even more interesting would be talking to my grandmother to find out what she knew, what she thought about his secret life, and if she knew other women living a life like hers. Story 23. I have so many. After recently losing my mother first in August 2021 and my father in May 2022, I was the executor of the estate, so there was lots of work, including taking care of all bills, cleaning out the house, and a variety of other things. Here is a list of surprises, and I will probably diverge slightly to include things I learned about my mother and father in the process. My father's death was a surprise and the result of bacterial and fungal sepsis. Although I had been helping him with health needs over an extended stay in rehab and was very familiar with the estate, there were surprises. My father did keep some stashes of cash, but last I heard he suspected someone stole his stash. I knew how he liked to hide cash in used checkboxes with old checkbooks on top. When going through the family safe, I started to find bank envelopes with $100 bills at the back of old checkboxes. I called my wife and sister as I continued to go through and found $8,700 over the course of an hour. My dad's best friend, who was his gambling buddy, let me know that my dad would bring one of those envelopes every time he gambled, and the $1,000 was his limit. But even more interesting, over their 20 years of going to casinos together, my father, who was a numbers guy and played the slots, only lost one time. I remember the time he lost, and how mad he was about it. Finally, on this topic, I worked at his, now my second home, and on Zoom calls, I would go through his desk and literally continue to find money daily for weeks. My father was meticulous in record keeping. I had tax returns, checkbooks, old notes where he had loaned money to other people, all dating back to the mid-1970s. My mother had cancer for more than 30 years, and when she died, the official report was congestive heart failure. We, including my father, thought that was a mistake, and she must have died of COVID. She was sick enough from cancer that we didn't question it. In going through paperwork, after my dad had passed away, she was being treated for years for heart failure, but it was literally the last thing in a long list of more acute ailments. Separately, since she had smoked heavily for 30 years before cancer, we don't think she wanted us to know, as the heart failure was likely the result of the years of prior smoking. Finally, I was taking care of my dad's expenses for the last 5 months of his life while he was in hospital and then in rehab. One of my father's checking accounts didn't seem to be used for anything except to pay one person. It was a female Hispanic name, and there were almost weekly payments. When visiting my dad in rehab one day, going over various things on his bills, I got the nerve up to ask him who it was and gave him the name. He looked at me with a wry grin and said, "I guess it is time to tell you about the other family." Well, it was the cleaning lady, and my sister had been paying her, so I didn't know her name. So, a non-find, but very funny. Great topic. Original poster. You do learn a lot post-death, and, although I knew my dad better than anyone, I wish I could have had the additional info prior to his death. Story 24. My dad was lying about where he was born. Me and my siblings are all from Brum, including my mum, and my dad was a full-on Brummies, or so we thought. He had the accent, the footy team, favorite pubs in town, etc. etc. He loved Birmingham. So do I, thanks to him. My mum and siblings never really liked it much, so it was mostly just me and dad. So, none of us really questioned it when he said that he was born in Brum. We knew he grew up some years in Brighton, and that his brother had a very posh South accent, but we never questioned it. They were very different anyway. I was 16 when he passed, and we found his birth certificate when cleaning out his flat. We didn't think we would even find it given the state of all of his documents. He had TV license fines buried in with his passport, for God's sake. It was a mess. The last thing we expected was to curiously flick through his birth certificate to see that he was born in Brighton. Cheeky rascal lied to us simply because he felt more at home in Brum than he ever did anywhere else. It doesn't surprise me, really. He was always a bit unreliable like that, got away with fibs. But I'm surprised we fell for it. Took him dying for us to find out. If he were alive today, he would definitely try to convince us that he never claimed to be born here, even though we were all convinced. To be honest, it only convinced me that he loved Birmingham even more, considering he wanted to lie about it. And of course the other surprise would have been those insane fines and penalties for various things. And also, we found out, he was a severe drinker. But the Brum secret was way cuter. Story 25. My maternal grandfather passed away in 1955. He was a mystery man. He spoke with a heavy Scots dialect, particularly when he was upset. His library included books in English, French, German, Spanish, and Cantonese. He had read them. Nobody in the family knew anything about him prior to his appearance in Vancouver. He married my grandmother there. She seldom talked. He had a horseradish farm at some point, switched to bok choy during the Depression, because nobody knew enough about the crop to impose agricultural controls. During the Second World War, he appears to have owned a hotel in Salem, Oregon, called the Argo. I have found a few old pictures of it online, but no history. When he died, there was a trunk in the attic containing some First World War uniform items and documents with the names redacted. It looks like he served in the Coldstream Guard. They have no record of anyone with his name. There were also some items that indicated he may have been a deck steward on a passenger liner, perhaps jumped ship in Vancouver. My mom was unable to track down anything else about him, despite years of effort. Story 26. A wildcat in the basement. My great uncle hadn't lived in the house in like a year and refused for anyone to go in it, even when he'd moved in with my mom and me after an injury. In that time, we were permitted to go to his house once, which only happened after he had a second injury and guaranteed he'd never live on his own again. I was like 9 and went with my uncles. I was out in the front yard just hanging out while they went in, and then I heard screaming with all three of them running out. The screen door snapped shut, and there a very large cat leapt at the door's window, smashing into it. It growled and darted off somewhere in the house afterward. Story 27. Not from cleaning out her house, but from talking to people who knew my grandmother for years before my mom was born. I found out my grandmother had a business degree. I found out she nearly moved to Indiana with a man who wasn't my mom's father and decided not to. If she had, we wouldn't even exist. I found out she was part of the group that fought to desegregate my local school system. The woman who planned her baby shower for my mom even showed us an awesome picture of my grandmother on a sweet 1950s sports car, I think. I don't know cars, but it was a nice car that she had written on with lipstick because the guy who drove it wouldn't leave her alone. I can't remember exactly what she wrote, but I know it was some kind of rejection. I wish I had asked the woman to send it to me. I'll have to see if I can't find her contact. My grandmother was awesome. I miss her so much. Story 28. The closest I got, is that I think one of my uncles, one of my dad's brothers may have been trans, or at least a cross-dresser. If I started listing all the reasons that I always assumed over the years that he was not straight, I'd be here all day. He passed way back in 2008 when he was only 61, and I was only 32. When we were cleaning out his things, my mom and I found several eyeshadow palettes, some lipstick, and setting powder, all obviously used, and no, there's no chance it belonged to anyone else. I don't think she ever pointed it out to my dad. I still have some of the eyeshadow palettes tucked away somewhere. I wish he'd taken better care of himself. I wish I'd had the proverbial family jewels to just ask him about it. I know that he didn't hold the same prejudices in that regard as much of my family did, and he knew that I didn't either, but I never wanted to ask directly because I never wanted to put pressure on him. I know how our family was and still is, and we were still in the age of don't ask, don't tell. I've used he, him throughout, because that's all he ever openly identified as, and I'll never truly know one way or the other, but I will always hold some regret that he may well have died without ever having been able to be open about who he was. Story 29. I have a similar story, but my uncle wasn't transgender but gay. My mother and I had suspected for years he had a boyfriend because almost all weekends he went to someone in the north, some 200 kilometers from where he and my family lived, but he never brought him along or even mentioned him except when we asked. And then he would be very vague about it. He was just a friend. Like you, I always thought this had to do with our family being so conservative about it. I know he knew he could be open with me about it, but I never asked directly because, like you, I did not want to pressure him. I just hoped that someday he would tell me. The day he died, very unexpectedly, I went through his documents, searching for information, because I remembered this man, and I wanted to notify him, because, whatever their relationship was, I thought he must be an important person in my uncle's life, and thus he had to know. Mind you, I didn't know anything about him. I didn't even know his name. 2 days later, we called for the first time, and somewhere in that conversation, I just asked bluntly if he was my uncle's lover. I just couldn't be quiet about it anymore. He said no, but it could have been. 2 months later, when I was showing him the gravesite, the final word came out. They were lovers and had been for over 10 years. My heart broke. Truly broke. For the fact that they felt the need to keep their love closeted, even after his death. I thought of the fact that at the funeral, he was sitting in the fourth row while he should have been sitting in the middle of the first row, family's row, and I thought, and cried, of all the joy and fun we could have had if we had the chance of meeting and welcoming him years before, and I cried even more when he told me my uncle was getting ready to tell us about their relationship. I would do anything for a chance to see them both happily together in life, but this will never be. My uncle was 64. I am 36. He died June 26th of this year. Story 30. When my grandmother passed, we found a bundle of letters tied with a red ribbon with "burn if found" written on the top. Obviously, we read them instead of burning them. It turns out that our close family friend and uncle figure was grandma's boyfriend, dating back decades to when my grandfather was still alive and still married to my grandmother. My grandfather had a terminal illness that took years off him and was in an assisted living facility for the last years of his life, and this is apparently when the affair started. No one had a clue that this beloved family friend was actually her lover. He was almost 20 years younger than her, and they never so much as hinted that they were more than friends. Everyone was totally blindsided. We gave him the letters, and he was embarrassed that we had found out and mostly withdrew from contact. He died a few years ago and is buried in the same cemetery as my grandmother. Story 31. My uncle, my dad's brother, offed himself about a month ago. He was a retired firefighter. He had numerous signs of really bad depression and hid them from the extended family, but his wife and adult kids all knew about it and never said anything to him or tried to get him to go to therapy. They also never told any of us. My dad went over to their house a couple days after he died to pick up some things, and my uncle had always kept him from going into the basement. Turns out that was for good reason, because my uncle was a hoarder and we never knew it. He was one of those that's a good deal sale type hoarders where he'd buy something somewhere at a garage sale or clearance sale. My dad found 19 sets of golf clubs. The garage was almost completely full also. My aunt knew about this and hid it. Then it turns out that my uncle was in pretty significant debt, and he took out a second mortgage on his home to pay the mortgage for his daughter, my adult cousin, for several years. In the meantime, he somehow was losing money, and nobody knows how, because he had a firefighter state pension from 30 years where he was easily bringing home at least $90,000 per year. My aunt is on the local school board, and she retired with a teacher's pension. Nobody knows how they have no money, but they took a lot of trips, so reckless spending is what we're thinking. Turns out he hasn't paid income or property taxes in 4 years either. Yet again, my aunt didn't tell anyone. One of my younger brothers is an accountant, and he would've sat down and sorted their issues out for free. So now the whole family is pretty bitter at my aunt and two cousins because they knew that he had depression, was a hoarder, anxiety OCD related, had significant financial issues, and they didn't bother telling anyone. Story 32. My grandmother had lied to everyone about her marriage. It turned out she'd been married young to someone, we don't know who, and had met my grandfather when she was a nurse during the war. He was recovering in hospital after being a POW. They fell in love and ran away together. They left Winnipeg for his hometown in California and had my dad and his four siblings. Some years later, he cheated on her and his girlfriend got my grandmother and the children deported back to Canada. By that point, we think her husband had passed away. He was much older than her. My dad and his siblings never saw their father again, but found all this paperwork in a folder in my granny's house after she died that laid out the whole thing, plus some information from their father's youngest brother, whom they reconnected with after granny's death. Story 33. A couple years ago, I found out through Ancestry DNA that I have four half-siblings. I only met my dad twice, once when I was 12, which was planned, and once when I was 16. Which was not planned. After he passed away, I did the Ancestry DNA thing and was contacted by my younger half-sibling. We look like twins. She told me that when our dad passed away, she came into town to clean out his apartment and found a box with sentimental items in it, including his mother's note, before she offed herself and photos of me as a child. She had no idea who this mystery child was, because there were only photos. When she and I connected through Ancestry.com, and she was able to send me the pictures, I was able to verify that the photos were indeed of me. That's when I learned that my dad was married and raising kids. When he and my mother dated, he was living a double life. My mom never knew my dad was married with kids when they dated, and I made sure she never found out. She passed away about a year after I learned all of this. She had dementia the last few years of her life, and I felt that nothing good would have come from telling her the truth at that point. All of my half-siblings have different mothers, so I'm pretty sure my dad was a terrible person. Story 34. That papa, my maternal grandfather, invented the floppy disk and still had all of his specs and notes, and even a few of the original old giant floppy disks. We told his wife, who apparently called his old army friend, and mentioned them, because the next day, army men showed up and confiscated all his notes, specs, prototypes, and the super old floppy disks. My papa, now my family thinks, not only invented the floppy disk, we checked with his old company and the patent office, but when we emailed some photos of the notes and spectacles to his old company trying to figure out what he was last working on, and they sent back an email requesting we send the specs, notes, and prototypes within the next few weeks, and the army guys showed up the next day, took almost everything electronic, and thanked his widow for my papa's service to his country. I knew he had served shortly in Vietnam, then the army sent him to college to become an engineer. My family sat down and talked out everything about papa any one of us knew. Turns out, while very personable and charismatic, my papa was a man of many secrets. We, the family, came to the conclusion that my papa was a type of spy. For who, what, when, where, and why, we had no clue. I think my grandma, who predeceased my papa by almost 2 decades, had only remarried because he was lonely, or had to project a look, because his kids, my parents, aunts, and uncles all had the same sense that he didn't even really like his second wife. He just never got over grandma's death, and married the first desperate woman struggling with alcohol he met at his bar. And oh my goodness, she could go through a box of them and like 6 other strong cocktails and still be 11 a.m., and she hasn't finished her coffee. And she was a mean woman, and cheap, and had no clue how to do anything sober in life. Thank you for watching. If you enjoyed this video, be sure to give it a thumbs up, subscribe, and hit the bell icon so you never miss an update.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.